And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices every Sunday at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m., archiving at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also link to our guests. You'll be able to check out the information that we are going to give you here on the program. We certainly hope that you do so. And we are most encouraged by any comments you wish to make. We'd love to hear from you. Email address is TMYS, that's for, what else? Tell me your story, TMYS at richarddugan.com. That's TMYS at richarddugan.com. And thank you so much for being with us each week. Hope that you will also go to our archives page and take a look at all of the various guests that we've had, the wide variety of subjects and so forth. And please check out the information that they have to offer. If it resonates with you, as I've said many times before, go with it, take it, run with it. If it doesn't, leave it alone, okay? This program today is interesting because there's a part of me that says, I shouldn't be here. This particular topic has nothing to do with me. And yet at the same time, it has probably more to do with me than the folks who we're going to be talking, in a sense, directly to. I'm going to be talking with the author of, and actually a series of books dealing with, Warrior Goddess Training, Becoming the Woman You Are Meant to Be. Heather Asha Amara is, that's Heather Ash Amara is my guest. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, Heather.
You're so welcome, Richard. Thanks for having me.
We'll give you a little background very quickly. I was born and raised into a family, a total of eight, two parents, four sisters, and a brother. So I grew up in what would be considered, I think, a very, if I'm correct on this term here, very matriarchal system, if you will, or way of living. Not to say that our rights and things that we wanted to do were necessarily usurped, but that's not to say that we always got to watch what we wanted to on television.
Right.
By the same token, I learned an awful lot from my sisters and my mother, and of course, was very, very close to my mother's mother, my grandmother on her side. And one of the interesting things that has always intrigued me about people when talking about this subject, because I was, and I have to say, I'm gonna share this regardless of the repercussions here. I had an opportunity many years ago when he was in town. I had an opportunity, or I should say I availed myself of the possible opportunity of interviewing a man who was a part of the men's movement. His book was a primer to our men's group that I was holding in my home back in Phoenix at the time, and that was Robert Bly and his book Iron John. Mm. Now, the reason why I even bring this up is because when I went to get an interview with him, he was coming to Santa Barbara to speak. And he refused. He openly refused the interview because basically, I don't want to answer the same old questions over and over. When does a boy become a man? And those, and it's like, well, that's kind of where we would start, but we would go beyond that. And it's like, and I was so disappointed. I thought, wow, you know, I mean, I understand maybe he's getting tired of these kinds of questions. But we're all asking those questions and we look to those people who are either older and or wiser than us, who have had more experience, to try to find these answers to find our place in society, in the universe, if you will. So I really worked hard not to create any animosity towards him. I was just disappointed. I can't believe that he would take that position. But then again, maybe I caught him on a bad day, you know, put that into context. And hey, he was having a rough day, as we all do. There's another thing that people are not aware of. And I remember, am I correct in this? And I hope you can answer this question, Heather. As we are conceived, and as the embryo grows, my remembrance of biology is that we all, and I mean every single human being on the planet, started out as a female. And it wasn't until I don't know how many weeks or months in the X and the Y chromosomes, and maybe it was the DNA, that information said, let's add an X, boom. Or let's add another Y, boom. And you're either male or female. But we all started out with Y chromosomes. Is that a fair, as far as you know, am I correct on that?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. When an embryo is being developed for quite a while, it is female. And that there's a certain point where hormones flush through, testosterone flushes through the system, and that then creates gender. And either male, female, or there's many mixes of genders that we're now learning about, which is beautiful. So, but all of us, when we first incarnate as females.
And I have to say, what's so interesting about that is that there are so many things, it seems like our society seems to consciously or otherwise forget, intentionally or otherwise, about who and what we are as human beings, that then generates the separation. And, you know, just as we are making an attempt to understand the wide and diverse cultures of the world, to better get along with our fellow human beings, it seems as though we have also kind of committed the same crime when it comes to gender, male and female. And at least at this particular point in the conversation, I don't want to get into the rest of the gender conversation right now. We might get into that a little bit later. But this is interesting. I have to say that when I was coming to work today and I was looking at the title of your book, Warrior Goddess Training. Okay, I can see the warrior part. I mean, and sometimes we see that in women a lot. And sometimes that can be during particular times, and sometimes it's just, you know, the stereotypical, you know, cranky woman, and we see the old crone, so to speak. I'm sure you've heard that term before. But then there's the goddess part. And I remember as I was growing and listening to various programs, comedies and so forth, and I remember Tim Allen, who is the comedian who came out with the Men Are Pigs comedy routine. I don't know if you recall that or not.
Yes.
And he was criticized for that because they said he was promoting maleness in opposition to or against, if you will, when in fact it was, no, guys just need to get away and be with guys. Women have that same desire, don't they?
Yes. And I think it's really healing for a time for men and women to spend time doing work with their particular gender. So I think the men's movement of men doing work with other men is really helpful, as well as with the women's movement of women just spending time, because we're each domesticated differently. And so we have different language that we've learned to speak in different experiences. And it's not exactly black or white, but there's a lot of similarities of ways that women are trained, that we're unweaving and learning new ways of being. And it's the same thing with men. So it's very helpful for us to split the genders up and then come back together again. It's not about keeping separation. It's about separating out so that we can clean up what needs to be cleaned so that we can come back together again in a good way.
And that's really kind of the point. And that is that when we do separate and we go off and have those experiences, we bring them back and hopefully we get the opportunity on both sides to share with the other those experiences that then expand that person.
Yes. Exactly. And everybody benefits. That's why we're doing the work, is with the vision that everyone is going to benefit from us doing our individual work.
Now, I'm curious. I believe it or not, folks, I want to tell you, too, this book isn't just available for you to pick up a copy through Amazon or through her website, which we'll give you in a few moments here. It's available. And a matter of fact, Heather, I just downloaded the audiobook. And it's recorded. Now, I hope this was intentional, that a woman is doing the narration. She's the one reading the book. Now, I thought I had read that you were reading the book. in some of the information before I downloaded it, which was one of the reasons why I was going to download it. I thought, well, great, hear it from the author herself. But be that as it may, it's wonderful to be able to do that, to get these books and to listen to them. And then you can listen over and over and over again. And I think that's a great thing. You can also go to Heather's website, which is heatherashamara.com. That's HEATHERASHAMARA.com. We will be linked to that website as well, and we encourage you to do that. You can also, there's also the downloadable, you can download certainly the audiobook by going to audible.com, which is through Amazon. I think it's terrific, and I also produce audiobooks, and I know how much fun that can be as well, just sitting there as whether it's the narrator or the author. Because you as the author could actually change things along the way if you wanted to, because it's your book, you know. I'm curious about the aspect of this. It's 20 years in the making. I mean, this started back in 1997. Give us bring us up to speed from 20 years ago.
Well, I've been really blessed to be doing women's circles for that long and beyond, and. No, I was brought into teaching. I often think I was drafted, that I was just passionate about. I was studying a lot of different spiritual traditions, and I got really interested in European shamanism and wanted to share it. And the first circle that I ever held, and I just thought, oh, this will be great. Like 10 women will show up and I'll talk about what I'm learning. And 60 women showed up. And then women started coming to me saying, please teach me. I was like, I don't teach. I'm super shy. But I was so just delighted with what I was learning about how to come back into relationship with ourselves in a new way, that we're in relationship with the seasons and the cycles, that we honor birth and death, night and day, and coming back into what I call cyclical living. So we tend to be in a society where we're really geared towards linear living, that if you do this and this and this, this will be the result. And most of us are super stressed out and overcommitted. When you come back into cyclical living, you really realize that everything goes in cycles and seasons, and there's times to rest, there's times to be productive, there's times that things are dying and falling away, and times that are being birthed. So it's a much more natural cycle. And I was then really gifted to meet a man named Don Miguel Ruiz, who's the author of The Four Agreements, and I studied with him for the next, 15 years. So the Warrior Goddess Training is a blend of my years of working directly with women in circles and in healing modalities, and then the best tools that I could find from a lot of different traditions, and Toltec being one of the main traditions through Don Miguel Ruiz.
When as I'm reading this book, I am introduced to the influences from so many, I mean, certainly ones you just mentioned, but so many different cultures. I have been exposed, if you will, to primarily Native American growing in my 20s, 30s, and into my 40s, associated with a particular group through the Deer Tribe in Arizona, and a program. I don't know if you're familiar with this. You might be. It's a program called the Quadoshka. And it's a sacred program for couples. It's very, very intense and intensive. It's one of those three nights and a weekend, and each night is long. And then
yes.
the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And then you celebrate on Sunday, obviously, as many of these do, because you've come through the other end and you're still alive. You know, you don't think sometimes that you're going to make it. And yet I've always struggled with this whole aspect of learning about native cultures, indigenous cultures, because I felt like I was intruding. You know, I wasn't born and raised in any of these cultures or traditions. You know, my family, yes, I can trace the lineage, if you will, or at least the heritage, you know, the countries where we come from. And it was like my family, my parents probably created the types of rituals and ceremonies and so forth, if you will, culture of our immediate family and so forth. And I'm wondering if people struggle with that aspect of finding, if you will, that cultural influence that works for them, maybe out of a sense of fear of, like, I don't belong there. I don't want to interfere. I don't want to intrude. I don't want to misrepresent. I became a member of a particular philosophy, Baha'i philosophy, for a year and a half, but I left because I felt like I had joined under false pretenses. And they were very gracious about the whole thing. And I'm wondering if that has, if you run into that a lot, in especially in terms of, or if you ran into it yourself as you began to grow this wonderful training.
Yeah, it's a conversation that I have with people and with myself, because it's true that while I started in studying European shamanism, which is my background, I then really opened up to different traditions. And there are definitely people within particular traditions, Native American traditions, earth-based spirituality traditions, that are very, that feel very violated by other people coming in and taking their traditions and using them without staying connected, deeply, deeply connected to the roots. And there are other people within the traditions that are like, please come take the gifts and bring it to your people. Your people need this work. You know, whoever your people are, they need this work. And so for me, it's about being deeply respectful of where the traditions are that we're working with. And so, for example, working with Don Miguel and with his family, I'm very respectful of the family, that it's a lineage that's been passed down and that I've been graced to be brought into that family, really, and be part of the family and be able to share the teachings that have been passed down through the lineage. And I always make sure, I think this is so important for us that are out exploring, to reference back where the teachings came from, to be very respectful, to see how can we give back to the communities where the teachings came from. And it's a rich dialogue to keep open.
Let's talk about, and I'm going to ask this question this way. I'm just going to do that. From the work that you have done, the training that you yourself have gone through, the experiences, the reading, the people that you've associated with over the years, from your perspective, what is the difference between men and women?
Such a good question. You know, foundationally, we're the same. Foundationally, we want love, we want affection, we want to be seen. The differences between men and women is that a lot of it is how we've been trained. And that's what I'm working to rectify, we can say, is the way that women have been domesticated. That a lot of women are really struggling right now, which is different from when I've talked to men, around very deep self-worth issues, around making themselves small, around apologize constantly for everything that they do. But it's really, it's an apology for being alive, is what I see with a lot of women. I've seen that in myself. And so this place of being in relationship with power in such a way that we're comfortable with power is something that women are, there's a difference from men that I feel is from domestication, not from biology. There's definitely some biological differences that we're starting to find with men and women around how when women go under stress, what helps women is to work with other women, is to come back into community. And that's actually the way that we're naturally wired. So there are some definite biological differences that we're exploring more and more. And what I'm really interested in is helping women unweave the training that we've received that is a lie, that's not true, that causes us to judge ourselves, to go against ourselves, to sabotage ourselves, to give our power to other people. And so to come back into really deep alignment with who we are, what's authentic for us, and not be afraid to share that in the world.
And how is that done without, how can I put this? Without putting down or interfering with or suppressing the male of the species, because we see that happening too, where there are some women in our society in particular, but I'm sure around the world, they're so angry. They want to be women. They want to be around women. They want the feminine energy so much that they would just assume that males just disappeared from the planet.
Yeah, and there's always going to be, you know, in all traditions, religions, spiritual traditions, healing modalities, there's always going to be people that want separation or that are in anger, that are pushing back against. And no, within the feminist movement, we can say is there's been a cycle where, and this is true for all oppressed peoples, that there's a phase that we go through whenever you're in an oppressed group where you realize that you've been victimized, and that what happens is we become empowered, what I call empowered victims. So now it's, I'm angry, I'm mad at you for suppressing me, and now I'm going to judge and blame and put the energy outside. And it's a transition that we need to move through. So all different religions and spiritual traditions and people that are oppressed do this. And the anger is justified, but it's not sustainable, and it doesn't actually help make change. So I feel like it's the initial, like, I'm going to break through my own victimization. Then we get empowered, and then we're like, rah. And then we evolve into the next of like, okay, so now how do I deeply make the change? Mm-hmm. So I find it very easy to work with women in a way that doesn't bash men. I love men. Everyone, you know, the women that I work with love men. It's the behaviors that we're working to change, our own behaviors, and then really looking at some of the behaviors that men perpetrate, and to recognize it's not the human, it's the behavior, and that behavior was learned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that there have been times when certain news stories will pop up, and whether it be the abuses that are alleged to Catholic priests, who are predominantly and all male, or other incidents where you hear of men abusing and doing just horrific things to women, that I become at times ashamed of being the male of the species. Because when I was dating and I would come across different women, and they were so... they were so broken. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I was angry about that, because it's like, my God, now I have to clean up this other guy's mess. I don't want, you know, it's like, I don't want to have to deal with that. I would like to start fresh with a relationship that could flourish and grow and so on and so forth. Are you helping, and this is kind of, maybe this is where the work is headed, but is that what you're doing? Is you're helping to, so to speak, and I just use the term, fix women from the broken state to the unbroken state?
I'd put it this way. It's to help women realize they're not actually broken, that they've had experiences that were incredibly challenging. And, you know, just like being in this work, the amount of women that I talk to that are in abusive relationships or that had sexual trauma in their past, I mean, it's so high. It's really, really deeply sad that we are dealing with so much trauma towards women. And so to really help them to see they're not broken, they've had experiences that were challenging, and how to turn those experiences into strengths, how to heal from past wounding so that they are able to be really open, loving, compassionate, present in the moment, in the now, rather than living from the past. So I say that's the biggest work that I'm doing, is helping women get into the present and let go of their past so they're not dragging it along with them.
Do you think that it would have made any difference whatsoever, in light of the work that you are doing, that on November the 8th, 2016, we would have elected a female president? Would that have really made that much difference?
I think it would have actually made a huge difference. There was an election in Iceland in the 1980s where a woman was elected. She was the first democratically elected president in the world. And this was in 1980. So we, you know, things have not been changing very quickly.
Yeah.
So But what that did in that country is, it's an interesting, because part of why she was elected is that the banking system in Iceland had gone down and all of the major banks had tanked except for one, which was the bank that was run by women. And the women at the time said, well, we knew who to loan to. We loaned to people in our community that we knew could pay us back. And they did, whereas all the other banks failed. And because of that, the women in the country rallied and elected the first female president. And it made a huge difference in the country. And there's a really beautiful interview with some of these women that said once they saw there was a woman president, they were like, we can do anything. It really built their confidence up and shifted the whole culture, the whole country in a really positive way.
Well, there are those who are saying that in spite of the fact that that did not happen here in the United States, at least the conversation has been opened up on many different fronts, which can be viewed as a good thing. And yet at the same time, you know, you're sitting here and I'm sitting here and I'm watching the events unfold. And first of all, and you know, it was a frustration on my part because all I saw was every bully I ever knew when I was growing up as a kid, and I didn't want that. What I'm curious about, you know, is obviously there's this huge disparity, which I can't even as a male thinking logically, I can't fathom how two individuals, one male, one female, doing exactly the same job, and I know I'm getting off into more material, physical elements here, get paid differently. I cannot understand that there is that kind of disparity, let alone in many other walks of life in our society. It just, I've even said, because I've done hiring, and at one point, in one station I was working at where I actually did the hiring, I leaned more towards women because a lot of the guys came in with the preconceived notion that, hey, you guys don't pay me enough to do that. And I said, excuse me, that's in the job description. And it doesn't matter how much we're paying you, which I had no control over. This is the job. This is the task. Whereas the women that I would have work, they gave a damn. They cared about what was going on, and I'm talking across the board. I had one exception, one gal I trained for 3 weeks. I let her loose on an 8-hour shift, and it was a mess, and I unfortunately had to let her go. But because she said she was ready, and from everything I could see, she looked like she was ready. And I know she just got nervous, but over the course of 8 hours, I figured maybe the first or second hour. But that happens with all of us. But what about, I mean, you say things are actually moving rather slowly, and I'm kind of saddened by that because I would like for all of us to be on an equal footing in all areas. But are you seeing any progress, or is that just it? It's going to keep moving, but it's going to be slow.
Yeah, I think it's going to keep moving and it's going to be slow, and hopefully it will quicken. And I do feel like the recent presidential election and what's just happening in general has created a lot of awareness around realizing that it's not where we thought it was. And I think that was a huge shock for a lot of us. And I've talked to quite a few people of color. They're like, well, we knew that. We knew how much discrimination there still is against people of color and against women. But I think a lot of us kind of had a wake-up call of like, wow, there's still a ton of work to do. Mm-hmm. And so what we just need to keep being steady with the work, just keep raising our awareness, keep stepping forward into what we're passionate about, keep educating ourselves and others, and keep going, keep realizing, because it's really so much about working with what we call unconscious bias. So within each of us, we have things that we've learned that we don't even realize we've learned them. And it's really, education is the key to help all of us to get more aware of where are the places we're holding bias against ourselves and against others. And to be really honest, to be willing to be truthful and honest about what is within us that we're still unraveling, that we're still transitioning from.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying for years that until we sit down and talk about the differences and talk about our perspectives on things with others until we start doing that. I was even saying that after 9/11. I said, has anybody sat down and talked to these people and asked them why they're so pissed off?
Exactly.
Does anybody know really why?
Yeah.
No, no one bothers. Nope. We're just going to lob bombs and we're going to send boots on the ground and all of this kind of stuff. And I'm just, it's like, are you kidding? Believe it or not, it's now finally being talked about in terms of the conversation is now open saying, yeah, I guess we need to, in order to avoid some of these problems, we're going to have to talk with one another. And what's real interesting, I'm sure you've had these experiences as I have over and over again in our lives, where you come in with a preconceived emotional state, okay, and you want to confront this individual about maybe what they did, and you let them go first, and before you know it, they have actually literally taken the wind out of your sails. I didn't know that. I didn't know that was where you were coming from. I had no idea. Well, gee, maybe if you'd stopped and listened, you might have known. And you wouldn't have come in with that full head of steam. But now you know. And that's my perspective in this radio program. We're trying to educate people, trying to enlighten, inspire, and encourage people and inform them about the differences that actually bring us closer together than we realize. When we come back, I want to talk about the circle. I want to talk about some of the other terminology in regards to the warrior goddess training here on Tell Me Your Story. My guest is Heather Ash Amara, and it is Becoming the Woman You Are Meant to Be. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and I want you to stay right there. We will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We are talking with Heather Ash Amara and her book, Warrior Goddess Training, and it is Becoming the Woman You Are Meant to Be. I want to dive into that because I think it's extremely important to begin the process of understanding the path to your inner goddess. And first of all, I think maybe it's a good idea for us to state that this is not about superiority. This is not a competitive thing here. This is an individual self-awakening, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a, you know, as we work with these two energies of warrior goddess, they're energies that I believe are inside of everyone, men and women. And it's about that warrior focus, clarity, 100% commitment. And that goddess is about opening, creativity, play, and really being present as we move through the world.
So let's start at the beginning of this training. Now, there are terms we want to, as a matter of fact, that's a good place to start. I like defining terms. And you actually have one chapter or one section at the front of the book called Explanation of Key Terms. One of them is agreement. Talk to us about what that means in the context of the warrior goddess.
An agreement is something that we say yes to either consciously or unconsciously. So all of us make some conscious agreements. And a conscious agreement might be, I'll work at this job for this many hours for this much pay. So we're consciously agreeing to it. But what we really are exploring is what unconscious agreements we've made. And those are the agreements that we take on when we're kids that we either sponge up from our parents or our church or our society without realizing that we're taking them on, or things that we make up. So an example of an unconscious agreement, if you can imagine being in the car with your family and you start singing your favorite song, and maybe you're 4 years old and you're singing really loud and you love this song, and one of your parents says, stop singing right now, and you stop. And right there, most likely you make an agreement. And the agreement might be, I can't sing, I don't have a good voice, I'm not supposed to be loud. And maybe your parent was, they had a headache or they heard an emergency truck and they couldn't figure out where it came from. And even if they then say, I love your voice, keep singing, you make this agreement, I can't sing. And these type of agreements, we make tons of these when we're kids. And when we're adults, then suddenly we find that we're limited and we don't know why. So if somebody then as an adult says to this person, hey, come sing for me, we're going to do karaoke and you're first, your response would just be fear. It would be like, no, I don't sing. So we want to begin to explore and look at what agreements we create that aren't serving us. And how we do that is by showing up in our life and getting really curious about what our thoughts are, how we're reacting to things, how we feel in our body, what's happening emotionally. And as we do that, we can begin to track what these old agreements are and begin to change them. So we have more freedom, more internal freedom.
Again, of course, folks, we are sitting here talking about, of course, the warrior goddess training, but this applies to both male and female the same. What about attachments? I've struggled with that, especially when it comes to the passing of someone that I know and or care about, because some folks I know about them. I've met them a couple of times, but there's no real attachment there. So I don't have that same feeling, you know, of loss in that respect. And of course, I'm speaking here specifically of that aspect of loss. But we tend to attach to a lot of things, as well as, I guess, maybe this also has to do with what things that we attach to mentally, as well as emotionally and spiritually.
Yes, and we attach to things when we're trying to keep ourselves safe, give us a sense of support, of safety, of understanding. So we attach to the roles that we play. We attach to who we think we're supposed to be. We attach to our jobs or our families. And it's, for me, it's not about not having attachments. It's becoming really aware to recognize where we're using an attachment to give ourselves a sense of safety, and to learn how to find that sense of safety from our core rather than something we're grabbing onto from the outside.
The next word, domestication, makes me think of a phrase that I often have heard, mostly on television, but occasionally in real life, of women who are planning on marrying someone or spending a long time with a gentleman. I am going to train him. I'm going to make him into the man I want him to be, which is sort of a form of domestication. But let's hear your definition of domestication.
And such a bad idea.
I know.
So domestication is how we're raised as kids and what we try to do to each other as adults. But how we train kids is through a series of rewards and punishments. And the reward is love, affection, safety. And the punishment is withdrawal of love. And so what we're learning to rectify right now, I put it this way, is that for a lot of us, there's this feeling sense of having a scarcity of love, that there isn't enough love. And so we look for it outside. And this is what gets women and men into trouble, into situations where we're going against ourselves. And so when we recognize domestication, when we recognize that we're seeking approval and love on the outside, then we can begin to come back into ourselves and find that wellspring I believe all of us have inside of us, of connection to something larger, connection to the divine, connection to spirit, connection to our higher self, whatever that you want to call it. So that helps us then release the attachments that don't serve us and stay really centered in a beautiful way in ourselves, so that we're exuding love rather than trying to grab and find love.
The next two sort of go hand in hand to some degree. Earth goddess spirituality and European shamanism. And actually one, I suppose, would go into the other. I mean, I was born and raised into the Catholic Church, the Western Rite, of which there are two, the Eastern and the Western. And I married a woman in 1983 who was a member of the Eastern Rite of the Catholic Church, Byzantine, which a lot of people mistook for Orthodox. Well, it was somewhat Orthodox, but it was still under the Pope. I have always loved the structure, the ritual, the ceremony, the incense, the candles, all of the trappings and the symbolism. And it seems like we have lost so much of that here in the West in particular, in terms of, and I am guessing, because I haven't participated in one of your circles or trainings, I am going to guess that there is an enormous amount of that in the context of what you're doing, in an effort to really bring some wonderful energy and inspiration and meaning to what is happening with each individual in that group. But talk to us a little bit about these two elements.
Yeah, earth-based spiritualities are traditions all over the world that are deeply connected to the earth. And as I said, the cycles, the seasons, the elements. And for most of us humans, we crave ritual because it's a physical manifestation of our connection to something larger. And so I remember the first time I went to a Catholic wedding, I was like, wait a minute, I know that. Because so much of Catholicism, for example, and most Christian traditions, a lot of the ritual and ceremony was actually pulled from the European shamans,
mm-hmm.
from the pagans of the time. So I love working with ritual and ceremony now because it helps us to mark transitions in a really physical way. And we really need more tools that are body and physical based than just mental. So we can't think ourselves out of many of the things that we've created, but we can use ceremony to mark and honor transitions, to really name what is it that I'm releasing, and then do something physical to release that, whether that's burning something or burying something or dancing it out, and then marking a way to get clear about what you want to bring in. What is it that you want more of in your life? And really, that's what ceremony is doing, is it's marking what we're moving away from and what we're moving towards in a way that we get it deeply in our bodies rather than just our heads.
I like that. And I have, when I had our men's group, there's only three of us. There were, at one time, we may have had five, but it was always a core three gentlemen. And I, at the time, I was the only one who was married. The other two who had been divorced, one guy actually was in another relationship while he was in the process of divorcing his present wife, which was real interesting. But I know that each of us learned some very valuable things. But one of the things that we would do is, and then we converted the men's group from just meeting in my backyard and flipping through the pages of Iron John and then talking about, reaching the catabasis, the bottom of the well, as it were, and so on and so forth. We decided we were going to go out and we were going to hike. And then we would stop and we would dig a small hole to build a fire in so that it would be very easy to put that out. And we might bring some food to cook on the fire and some drinks and so forth and so on. And we'd sit and talk. We even went on a camping trip one weekend, which was really great. And it was these kinds of gatherings. Again, it was only three of us, but still it was a gathering. These kinds of gatherings were so meaningful to me because I was with a couple of guys who were for the most part, of like mind. They were curious. They wanted to learn. They wanted to grow. They wanted to better understand, what was going on in their lives. And it was an extraordinary experience. Mm-hmm. One in particular, we actually went hiking in the rain. And we crossed this one creek. Whereas we crossed it, it was ankle high. And then we climbed up the hill and we walked across the top of this waterfall that was still flowing because of all the rain that was coming down. And as we headed back down, we crossed that same creek back the other way. It was now thigh high, which was rather extraordinary. But it didn't matter how wet we got. I mean, once you were soaked, you couldn't get any wetter. So, and we just had the greatest time in that experience. We even went up into what is called the Superstition Mountains to the east of the Phoenix metropolitan area. And, of course, here in California, oak trees are protected. Okay? Well, in Arizona, it's the saguaro cactus that's protected. And the exception to the rule is you cannot do anything to a standing saguaro. And if it's fallen, okay, now it's fair game. We found one that had fallen after a rainstorm, and this was one of our rituals. And we only did this once. This wasn't something we did on a regular basis. We began to cut away three spines from that cactus, and we began to carve them out a little bit and make hiking sticks, of which I still have that stick, that hiking stick.
Nice.
And then I placed a crystal on the top of it and da da da, and I decorated it, if you will, ornamented it. I don't think that's the right word, but anyway. I mean, we just had a great time, and so I have that memento, but I also have that experience. I have that event that says, yeah. As a matter of fact, even one of those experiences on one of these camping trip. You remember the movie City Slickers, where the three guys were riding horseback and they were chatting and talking about their best day?
Yes.
Relating that to the transition from boyhood to manhood, and we'll talk also about womanhood, girlhood to womanhood. During one of these camping trips, and I was 33 at the time, I shared this at a dinner after the fact with my parents, to which my mother said, well, it's about time. That was one of my best days. And, you know, and I thought how profound it was because of that age, 33, and the significance of 33. Talk to me about that transition for women and I call them milestones. And I love to have those. I was hoping to be married to the same woman to where, for like my parents, they're celebrating 61 years together. And I was hoping that by this time I would have celebrated, 30 heading for 40 years. But I had to start over, which irritated me to no end. But talk to me about these wonderful milestones for women.
Honoring the different stages of life is so powerful. And when we, you know, what's one of the things that we've really lost in our culture is that we don't have initiation ceremonies any longer. We have very few, even just rituals. So we have birthdays are one of the few rituals we have, and Christmas, you know, or Hanukkah. So those are very few rituals that we have left. And so to create initiation situations for ourselves is incredibly powerful. And as much as possible to give those to our girls as well. So in all tribal traditions, there's a time around puberty where both men and women, the young boys and girls, are sent out often into the woods to do a vision quest. And then brought back into the society as an adult, and they're really treated differently. It's like you go in as a child and you come back bringing wisdom back to the community and the tribe. And so if we can look at, I love doing this, of looking at where were the places in my life growing up where there were transitions that if there had been a ritual, it would have helped create more of a connection for me. And I found it really helpful to go back to those times and name them, and grieve if I needed to grieve or have whatever emotion might have been there. And then to ask myself the question, okay, so what did I need at that time? So for example, I moved around a lot as a kid. My family traveled extensively and we moved about every 2 years. And I went back one day and I was like, wow, what would it have been like if we had done a ritual as a family every time we moved? What would that have looked like? And that's a great thing to do, not to try and rewrite and say that was a bad experience, I'm going to put something better on top, but to start to untangle it and look at possibilities. And that also helps us then be creative in our present life, to look at where are the transitions that are happening in our life now that we can honor, that we can mark in some way. And that's really powerful. And we all have that creative capacity to listen to our own being and ask ourselves, hey, sweetie, what do you need right now? What would serve you in this transition? What can we physically do that would help mark this journey that we're on? And it makes it much more rich and sustained in beauty.
I can absolutely agree. You know, it's also interesting, too, how every once in a while there are rare circumstances when, in my case, I was allowed to be present at an all-female gathering. And it was a tea that my wife was giving for my mother and my four sisters and my nieces at our house. And she went just crazy with the tables and the centerpiece and all, everything. And the reason I was allowed to stay was because I was willing to serve. I didn't participate.
Yes.
I served. And they got to sit there at the tables and just for, I guess, a couple of hours. And it was fantastic. Now, I didn't stay there watching and listening. You know, I came in, delivered, left, you know, and so on and so forth. And I did that willingly. It wasn't, you know, you're going to do this kind of thing. I could have gone off and done something else. But I thought it would have been, it was, I just figured I was going to help to facilitate an experience where she could sit there with the rest of the women of the family. I want to say of the clan, of the circle, if you will, I guess. Yes. You might use it. And just be there without nice. Having to do anything else. And they've held tea since. Matter of fact, for Mother's Day, from what I understand, my mother was treated to something similar. I think it was at one of my sister's homes in Phoenix, where all of the females got together. My dad, because I remember calling my dad, my parents' house, and my dad answers, "Oh yeah, they went off. I wasn't invited." As but it's one of those things where we need to have those times. And it's hard sometimes because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, especially with women, not so much with men. They seem like they can go off with guys at a moment's notice. But it can be troubling for women because, I guess, again, because of a lot of the experiences that they've had, there is a certain feeling of threat from the standpoint of, is he coming back? Who's he going to see? And so on and so forth. And you know, help me to understand this aspect of allowing the men to go off with other men and not being worried that they're not coming back, that they're going off to see other women or this kind of thing. You know, because I know that we've all kind of run into that. And yet, if I don't go and do this thing, I'm going to feel incomplete in a manner of speaking. And women, the same thing.
Yeah, in all relationships, we need shared context, so places that we overlap, and we also need differentiation. And that differentiation is the places where there are things that we do on our own, things that we have different likes or different ways of expressing ourselves. And we also all have insecurity in relationship. And so to really learn to trust each other, that there are experiences we need to have on our own in order to grow as humans, and that actually can strengthen a relationship. The fear is, oh my gosh, you're going to go and grow without me or have an experience and then not want to be with me. But that place of really holding the connection and the honoring of our partners and our family and our friends to say, yes, go grow and I'll be here when you come back is so beautiful. And that's about us each learning to work with our own insecurities, our own fears, to name them and to stay with ourselves and honor what other people need for their growth as we do what we need for our growth. Mm.
I have to say that when I would go off on these hikes with my buddies, and this was with my first wife at the time, the only time that I became concerned was when we went on what was called a half-day hike. We left at 10 o'clock in the morning, or we started hiking at 10 o'clock once we got to our destination, not realizing that the term half-day was literal, because we were walking in the dark by a sliver of moonlight to try to get back to the car. And it took us until 10 o'clock that night to do that. And I was concerned because at that time I didn't have a cell phone. And I was concerned that there was no way that I could contact her until we got back to civilization to let her know, hey, I'm okay. Sun's gone down. It's dark. She's by herself and all these things. And, you know, and I'm out here in the wilderness, strangely enough, not stumbling around. That was what was very interesting. That moonlight was just enough to where while we walked, we did not trip over one rock or pebble. The irony is when we came back in the daylight to retrace our steps, we couldn't help but trip over damn near everything that was in our path. And, of course, I've shared this before, and some of my guests have talked about, well, yeah, you had that inner eye, if you will, or that intuition and so forth. talk to us about, from your perspective, from the warrior goddess perspective, intuition.
All of us have connection to intuition, and something that we can grow as well. And it is that place where we're connected to our senses and using them to their capacity. And in that way, we sense things in a much larger perspective. So like you're saying, we're able to do things that the mind is like, that's impossible. But we're being guided by a combination of instinct and intuition. And as we open up our creativity, as we let go of the past, as we begin to come more and more into the present, what I've seen over and over again is that our intuitive capacities come online more and more. And we're able to know things or sense things before they happen. We're able to be in the right place at the right time because we're more connected to the flow of life. Rather than thinking about it, we're in it. And that makes all the difference.
Mm. Why? We've kind of covered this, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. Why should a woman consider warrior goddess training?
For any women that are in transition, that are wanting to step into using their voice in a cleaner, more clear way, that want to step into their power, that are willing to let go of the past or have been trying to let go of the past, warrior goddess training is a powerful guide because it has tools that really work for modern women. It's ancient tools, as I like to think about it, it's ancient tools that have been used for thousands of years, some of them, that have been updated specifically for modern women and the issues that we are working with as modern women. And so it's so helpful to have support, to have tools, to have a pathway that is lit by people having walked down it before.
Do you find that most women respond positively to this ritual and ceremony and celebration and marking these milestones within just the context of the training itself?
Yes, definitely. And there may be some, I know I talked to some women that are like, I wasn't sure about this at the beginning. And then they have a couple of experiences and they're like, yes, I've been craving this. So there's a way that the warrior goddess work fulfills a deep need that women have that sometimes we don't even realize that we have it. Because there's something that we're missing is this sense of connection, is this sense of being part of something larger and community. And when we experience it for the first time, and I've seen this over and over again in the weekends that I teach or women that come with me on journeys or that have read the book, there's this sense of coming home to something that's been missing that they didn't even recognize was missing. So it's really powerful, beautiful work.
One of the, I'm going to say, stereotypes from the male perspective is that these female gatherings, and again, this is from the male perspective, are highly sexually charged.
I wonder why that is. I've heard that recently and I'm like, really? Okay. They're so usually not. And some of them are. I mean, absolutely, depending on what people are working on. But I know for the gatherings that we do with Warrior Goddess that there is the amount of just pure love, support, cheerleading, presence, tears, releasing old emotion is so beautiful and so high. And it's not about sexuality. It's really about heart deeply. And so I don't know if it's a male fantasy of like, ooh, all those women together, they must be being sexual. I'm going to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
Now, in that vein, you talk about running sexual experiments or experimentation. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. So Warrior Goddess Training, the book goes through 10 different lessons. And what I did is looked at where are the different areas that women need support. And one area is around sexuality. Because for a lot of women, we've been taught really that our bodies aren't our own and that we have to be sexual in order to be loved, that love and sexuality are linked. And so many women have sexual trauma, are disconnected from their sexuality. And so there's a whole chapter in the book that's focused on coming back into what I call sexual integrity, which is women really owning their sexuality for themselves, their pleasure for themselves. That it's not just about who you choose to be sexual with. It's about recognizing sexual energy is our creativity. It's our life force. It's our passion for life. And so once we claim that for ourselves, we become more vital. We become more in love with everything and willing to stay with ourselves and really ask, what do I want? What would serve me best? And around pleasure and around sexuality. And just giving women permission to be in relationship with their sexuality is a very healing thing.
I know that there are a lot of misunderstandings, if you will, in this area for men and women. And I'm curious as to any kind of outreach that you might have from the Warrior Goddess to, I'm not sure what the converse term is, Warrior God? to the male of the species. I don't want to say integrate, because again, this is not for the men, but they can benefit from their partner, their woman, going through this kind of training. So what kind of, connection, if you will, or integration in that regard of Warrior Goddess Training outreach to the male of the species?
Yeah, well, I really encourage men that are in relationship with women in any form, which is all men, hopefully, to read Warrior Goddess Training, as both, because I've talked to many men that have read it that are like, I learned so much about me. And simultaneously, as men read the books, a lot of the teachings are for everybody. And it also helps you get an understanding of what women are going through and what our unique experiences right now. And so that's a really great place to start as a man, if you're trying to find out how can I best be supportive of the women in my life, to read books that are actually geared to women so that you get a sense of what we're working with right now. And to then recognize that you're going to get more of your partner, of your sister, of your, like, she's going to be more loving and present and connected as she does her own healing work. And so the more that we support women in doing their work, the more everyone benefits. The kids benefit, the partners benefit. There's huge benefit at work. So that place of being the best support you can be as women go through their own healing, which sometimes can be rough in the beginning as things start shifting, but to learn how to stay steady and to trust the process can be really powerful.
I don't know if this has to do with the fact that I grew up with five females in the house, but when I was married and we would go to the grocery store and there was a need for the feminine hygiene products, I didn't have a problem going down that aisle. It's like, oh, you need that? Oh, okay. It's in the store. It's, you know, it's there.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and yet I know so many guys, it's like, oh, no, that's the forbidden zone. I don't go down that aisle. It's like, are you kidding me? We're talking about, I learned about all this stuff in biology. How is this a problem for you?
Exactly.
How is this a problem? Or any aspect of the female. I'm trying to use as broad a term as I can, because I'm not just talking about the biology. I'm talking about the total woman, the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. How is it that you don't know that this is the way that they are? And I'm not saying that I understand. God knows that I'm still learning. and I'm hoping to continue to do so. You know, sometimes, maybe again, is it because I grew up with five females? I suppose. It just seems kind of strange in our day and age when it's all out there that there are still guys that they put up the two fingers like the cross, you know, stay away, you vampire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. More education is needed for sure.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't tell you how many men are like, oh, I can't read that book, it's for women. And I think about all the books I've read that were written for men.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, but we don't think twice about that. It's like, oh, well, that's just normal. So I look forward to the day where men really understand that it's not that we're trying to separate ourselves. Women have a particular healing that we're in the process with. And the more men educate themselves to understand that and to get past all the stereotypes and all their own fears, that it will benefit all of us hugely. So, yeah.
I'm curious. I think I do have the gentleman's name correct. Do you think that a guy by like the gentleman? No, that's not the right guy. I'm trying to remember his name now. The author of Men Are from Mars, Women Are from Venus. Do you think that he helped or hurt? Do you think he was beneficial for both women and men, or do you think he did more harm than good?
That's a good question. I think it was probably mixed. I think it was, you know, that book was really revolutionary when it came out, and mm-hmm. it really helped us understand that there is a difference between men and women. And people will use every teaching and twist them.
Yeah.
So I think the unfortunate part is that people then also took that and said it's irreconcilable. Men and women are completely different, and women are all like this. So I know that wasn't his intent, but then people take teachings and use them in different ways.
Yeah.
So I feel like overall it was probably beneficial, and we're always going to be course correcting what yeah. people do with our work.
What has been the most profound milestone in your life?
Gosh, so many. I would say one of them recently, I went through a very difficult divorce. And while it was not a milestone I would, you know, have chosen in my life, looking back at what that kicked me into, like what that projected me into of going through that experience, was one of the biggest gifts in my life, because it really... I had the opportunity to undo a lot of agreements I had created and really stand on my own in a way that I hadn't done before. And so I feel very blessed by that opportunity that I was given, kicking and screaming, to go through because of the result of it. So I would say that was one thing.
Yeah, mine wasn't that much fun either.
I don't think they ever are much fun.
Although I was able to take some humor on the day I was served papers, which was May 1st of 1998. And I said, boy, you know what? This gives a whole new meaning to the phrase Mayday.
Yes.
And that was it. I was an emotional basket case for a month. And then in June, I was able to pull myself out of that and get back on track. Is there a milestone that you're looking forward to?
Well, I just had another one. I just turned 50. And
oh, you are so lucky.
I'm so lucky. It was such a good time. I'm still young. It was such a great milestone for me because I took myself on a sabbatical for 2 months. I took myself to India and Bali by myself. And it was really exquisite to unplug. I mean, I work with so many people, which I deeply, deeply love. And so to basically put everything on hold and say, I'm giving this to myself, was really profound and just such a beautiful, beautiful gift.
And there's so that. Go ahead.
Yeah. And I have a big milestone coming up. I'm about to move to New York next week.
Wow.
So
are you moving to the island, Manhattan?
I'm moving to Manhattan. I'm moving to Harlem.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I've been to New York once. It was in 1993. It was actually the weekend of Earth Day. My wife and I flew out there. My first wife and I flew out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still remember walking Fifth Avenue southward. What is that community south of, I think it's Washington Park? Greenwich Village, I think. Anyway.
It might be Greenwich Village, yeah.
And we never made it all the way to the down to where the towers, the Trade Center towers were. But I remember us walking back up and over towards Central Park. We found ourselves in the middle of Central Park. And you may or may not remember this television show, The Odd Couple. And one of the scenes was the big fountain.
Yes.
Well, we were standing by that fountain that I had just recognized. We turned around to look eastward or westward into the park. And there was this mass of people headed right for us. We couldn't get out of the park fast enough. Now, it wasn't threatening. It was because it was Earth Day and there were a jillion people coming into the park to celebrate. But I still remember being there on a Friday afternoon. Work day was over, 5 o'clock, and all the people were streaming out of the high rises. And two thoughts, feelings went through. And I sort of envy you because I'm loving living in the rural areas here in Santa Barbara. Two feelings went through me. One of excitement. Oh, man, this is incredible. Look at all these people. And this is everybody's moving and doing this and that. The other aspect was sadness that all of these people were, for the most part, sort of oblivious of one another.
Mm, yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. They were in their own world. And that was 93, and there were no cell phones.
Right.
Not
it's
like today.
Crazy now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of eerie to be on the subway and everybody's on their device pretty much.
Yeah. I loved actually taking the train out of New York, out to Long Island, which is where my friend lived. That's where we were staying. And we just had a great time out there. And I loved being there. My wife wants to go one of these days. So I'm thinking, all right, for a trip. Okay. Not moving, but for a trip.
For a trip.
We'll go to Manhattan, you know. I don't know where we'll stay. I know somebody there. Heather Ash Amara.
We can stay with her.
That's right. Warrior Goddess Training is the name of the book, Becoming the Woman You Are Meant to Be. I want to thank you so much, Heather Ash, and I appreciate the time, so much time that you've given us. Also, the work that you're doing, I think that this is not only extraordinary, but extremely important for people to get into themselves. I still kind of chuckle about the 60s phrase where people were saying, I'm not going to college, I'm going to travel to find myself. You know, and it's like, but you're right here, you know, and that is more true than you realize. But I am so grateful that you have put this together for people to work towards. And again, the website is just that. It is her name, Heather Ash Amara, and that is HEATHERASHAMARA.com. We'll be linked to it, so it'll be much more convenient for you to just click on the link and go straight there. Before we let you go, first of all, in spite of the fact that you are moving to New York, should you find yourself here in Santa Barbara, in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Great. Thank you. I would love that as well, Richard. Thank you so much.
Three final questions for you that I ask all of my guests as we wrap up the program. And again, our thanks to you for joining us. The first question is, who is Heather Ash Amara?
I would say a force of life and somebody who loves living joyfully, presently, in all of the manifestations of life.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
To help people to have great respect for themselves and for all the diversity and all the ways that we express as humans.
And what is your life's purpose?
To love. To love everything as fully as possible.
And that's rather appropriate considering the quote at the beginning of your epilogue, I found God in myself and I loved her. I loved her fiercely. And again, we thank you so much for sharing your time and your story and the information regarding the warrior goddess training, becoming the woman you are meant to be. And Heather Rush, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks, Richard. Take good care.
You too. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.